0017. The Director. One spring day at the Southern Reach, you're taking a break, pacing across the courtyard tiles as you worry at a problem in your head. And you see something strange out by the swamp lake. At the edge of the black water, a figure squats, hunched over, hands you cannot see, busy at some mysterious task. Your first impulse is to call security, but then you recognize the slight frame, the tuft of dark hair. It's Whitby, in his brown blazer, his navy slacks, his dress shoes. Whitby, playing in the mud. Washing something? Strangling something? The level of concentration he displays, even at this distance, is of working on something that requires a jeweler's precision. Instinct tells you to be silent, to walk slow, to take care with fallen branches and dead leaves. Whitby has been startled enough in the past, by the past, and you want your presence known by degrees. Halfway there, though, he turns long enough to acknowledge you and go back to what he's doing, and you walk faster after that. The trees are as sullen as ever, looking like hunched-over priests with long beards of moss, or, as Grace says, less respectfully, like a line of used-up old drug addicts. The water carries only the small, patient ripples made by Whitby, and your reflection, as you come close and lean over his shoulder, is distorted by widening rings and wavery gray light. Whitby is washing a small brown mouse. He holds the mouse, careful but firm, between the thumb and index finger of his left hand, the mouse's head and front legs circled by this fleshy restraint, the pale belly, back legs, and tail splayed out across his palm. The mouse seems hypnotized, or for some other reason preternaturally calm, while Whitby, with his cupped right hand, ladles water onto the mouse, then extends his little finger and rubs the water into the fur of the underbelly, the sides, then the furry cheeks, followed by anointment of the top of the head. Whitby has draped a little white towel across his left forearm. It is monogrammed with a large cursive W in gold thread. Brought from home? He pinches the towel from his forearm and, using a single corner, delicately daubs the top of the mouse's head, while its tiny black eyes stare off into the distance. There's a kind of febrile extremity of care here, as Whitby proceeds to wipe off one pink clawed paw and then the other, before moving to the back paws and the thin tail. Whitby's hand is so pale and small that there is a sort of symmetry on display, an absurd yet somehow touching suggestion of a shared ancestry. It has been 4 months since the last member of the last 11th expedition died of cancer. 6 weeks since you had them exhumed. It has been more than 2 years since you came back across the border with Whitby. Over the past 7 or 8 months, you have had a sense of Whitby recovering. Fewer transfer requests, more engagement in status meetings, a revival of self-interest in his combined theories document, which he now calls a thesis on terroir, evoking a comprehensive ecosystem approach based on an advanced theory of wine production. There has been nothing in the execution of his duties to indicate anything more than his usual eccentricity. Even Cheney has grudgingly admitted this, and you don't care that the man often uses Whitby as a wedge against you now. You don't care about reasons, so long as it brings Whitby back closer to the center of things. What do you have there, Whitby? Breaking the silence is sudden and intrusive. Nothing you say will sound like anything other than an adult talking to a child, but Whitby's put you in that position. Whitby stops washing and drying the mouse, throws the towel over his left shoulder, stares at the mouse, examining it as if there might still be a spot of dirt here or there. "A mouse," he says, as if it should be obvious. "Where did you find her?"
"Him. In the attic. I found him in the attic."
His tone like someone about to be reprimanded, but defiant, too. "Oh, at home?" Bringing the safety of home to the dangerous place, the workplace, in physical form. You're trying to suppress the psychologist in you, not overanalyze, but it's difficult.
"In the attic."
"Why did you bring him out here?"
"To wash him."
You don't mean for it to seem like an interrogation, but you're sure it does. Is this a bad thing or a good thing in the progression of Whitby's recovery?
There is no base score assigned to owning a mouse or washing a mouse that can confer an automatic rating of fit or unfit for duty. You couldn't wash him inside? Whitby gives you an upturned sideways glance. You're still stooping. He's still hunched.
That water's contaminated.
Contaminated? An interesting choice of words. But you use it, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Relenting, giving in a little, relaxing so that you're less concerned he's going to strangle the mouse by accident.
But I thought maybe he'd like to be outside for a while. It's a nice day.
Translation. Whitby needed a break, just like you needed a break, pacing the courtyard tiles. What's his name?
He doesn't have a name.
He doesn't have a name?
No.
Somehow this bothers you more than the washing, but it's an unease you can't put into words. Well, he's a handsome mouse, which sounds stupid even as you say it, but you're at a loss.
Don't talk to me like I'm an idiot, he says. I'm aware this looks strange, but think about some of the things you do for stress.
You'd gone across the border with this man. You'd sacrificed his peace of mind on the altar of your insatiable fascination, your curiosity, and your ambition. He doesn't deserve condescension on top of that. Sorry. You awkwardly lower yourself in the dead leaves and half-dried mud next to him. The truth is, you don't want to go back inside yet, and Whitby doesn't seem to want to either. The only excuse I've got is that it's been a long day. Already.
That's okay,
Whitby says after a pause and returns to cleaning his mouse. Then volunteers,
I've had him about 5 weeks. I had a dog and a cat growing up, but no pets since.
You've tried to imagine what Whitby's house looks like and failed. You can only imagine an endless white space with white modern furniture and a computer screen in the corner as the only spot of color. Which probably means Whitby's house is an opulent, decadent free-for-all of styles and periods, all offered up in bright, saturated colors.
The plant bloomed,
Whitby says into the middle of your musings. The sentence has no meaning at first, but when it takes on meaning, you sit up straighter. Whitby looks over at you.
There's no emergency. It's already over.
You're quelling the impulse to pull Whitby to his feet and march him back inside to show you what no emergency means. Explain, you say, putting just enough pressure on the word to hold it there like an egg about to crack. Be specific.
It happened in the middle of the night, last night, he says. Everyone else had left. I work very late sometimes, and I like to spend time in the storage cathedral.
He looks away, continues as if you've asked him something.
I just like it in there. It calms me down.
And?
And last night I came in and I just decided to check on the plant.
Said too casually, as if he always checked on the plant.
And there was a flower. The plant was blooming. But it's gone now. It all happened very fast.
It's important to just keep talking, to keep Whitby calm and answering your questions. How long?
Maybe an hour. If I had thought it would disintegrate, I would have called someone.
What did the blossom look like?
Like an ordinary flower with 7 or 8 petals, translucent, almost white.
Did you take any photographs, any video?
No, he says. I thought it would still be there for a while. I didn't tell anyone because it's gone.
Or because with no evidence, it would be more evidence against him, against his state of mind, his suitability, when he is just now getting out from under that reputation. What did you do then? He shrugs, the mouse's tail twitching as he transfers the animal to his right hand.
I scheduled a purification, just to be sure, and I left.
You were in a suit the whole time, right?
Sure, yes, of course.
No strange readings after?
No, no strange readings. I checked.
And nothing else I need to know?
Like the possible connection between the plant having bloomed and Whitby the next day coming out here with his mouse?
Nothing you don't already know.
A shade defiant again. A lifting of his gaze to tell you he's thinking about the trip into Area X, the one he can't tell anyone about. The one that made him unreliable to the rest of the staff. How to evaluate hallucinations that might be real. A paranoia that might be justified. Right after you came back, you remember Whitby saying wistfully to himself, as if something had been lost, they didn't notice us at first. But then, gradually, they began to peer in at us. Because we just couldn't stop. You get to your feet, look down at Whitby, say, give me a more extensive report on the plant, for my eyes only. And you cannot keep sneaking a mouse into the building, Whitby. For one thing, security will catch you eventually. Take it home. Whitby and the mouse are both looking up at you now. Whitby harder to read than the mouse, which just wants to get out of Whitby's grasp and be on its way. I'll keep him in the attic, Whitby says. Do that. Back inside, you visit the storage cathedral, putting on a purification suit so you don't contaminate that environment, or it doesn't contaminate you. You find the plant, which has a false tag that designates it as belonging to the 1st-8th expedition. You examine the plant, the area around it, the floor, searching for any evidence of a dried-up flower. You find none, just a residue beside it that later comes back from testing as pine resin from some other sample that had sat there previously. You look at those test results in your office, and you wonder if the plant had only blossomed in Whitby's mind. And if so, what that meant. Wonder for a good long while, before the thought becomes buried in the memos and the meeting minutes and the phone calls and a million minor emergencies. Should you ask Whitby if the mouse came with him into the storage cathedral? Perhaps. But what you do instead is put the immortal plant under round-the-clock surveillance, even though both Chaney and Grace give you grief about it. Whitby just needs a companion. Whitby needs someone who won't judge or interrogate him, someone or something that depends on him. And as long as Whitby keeps the creature at home, in the attic, you won't tell anyone about the breach. I've recognized by now that just as Lowry's tethered to you, you're chained to Whitby. Playing pool with the realtor and the veteran on an expedition to the Star Lanes a week later, you're listening to the realtor describe some couple that had been squatting in a model home and refused to give her their names, when you think again about Whitby not naming the mouse, as if he'd been following Southern Reach protocol for expeditions. They thought that so long as I didn't know their names, I couldn't call the police, peering out from behind the curtains like ghosts. There was so much fail in that. Not that I felt good about kicking them out, except I have to sell the place. I'm not running a charity. I give to charity, sure, but why do they have homeless shelters anyway? And if I let them stay, then someone else might get the same idea. It turns out the police had a file on them, so I made the right decision. Waiting there, back on your desk at the Southern Reach, you already have the files of candidates for a 12th expedition. Right on top is the most promising, to your mind, an antisocial biologist whose husband went on the last 11th.